Okay, our second presentation this morning will be by Rachel Endicott. Rachel is the Extension Beef Cattle Specialist here at Montana State University. We stole her from the USDA ARS station out at Fort Keogh in eastern Montana. Rachel has her PhD from New Mexico State in range cattle nutrition. And with that, Rachel is going to be talking to us about feeding risks for drought-impacted feeds and forages. So with that, help me welcome Rachel Endicott. Rachel, you're on.
All right. Thank you, George, and thanks, everybody, for tuning in today. Appreciate the invitation to be on this webinar. We're going to switch topics away a little bit from economics, and we're going to talk about animal science. And so I figure, I hope I can keep everybody kind of on the same page that I am, but I figure that maybe I get confused by economics presentation, so I'm not going to feel too bad if I might confuse some of you with my animal science presentation. So today we're going to talk a little bit about overall forage quality in regard to drought, as well as the bulk of the presentation will be talking a little bit about nitrate toxicity and a small bit at the end about prussic acid poisoning, two main issues, at least from my perspective, that I've seen come across my desk is in regard to drought. Certainly overall quality, as far as drought impacted forages goes, is obviously the inhibition of growth leads to low or no quantity. In that regard, however, legume quality might increase as leaf growth decreases less than stem growth in a drought situation, but on the other hand, grass quality probably decreases because the stem to leaf ratio is increased. All right, we'll move into nitrate toxicity, a pretty hot topic. Well, so what is it and what plants accumulate it? Well, annual small grain crops or cereal forages such as wheat, barley, millet, and oats, as well as corn and sorghum and sedan grass families have been known to accumulate nitrate. In addition to crops that we might find desirable, weeds, such as this big long list here, which are common weeds in a lot of these production areas, also have the ability and the tendency to accumulate nitrate. So where do they accumulate that nitrate? Well, the highest concentration is going to be in the stem or the stalk, and especially the lower portion. For example, the lower third of a corn stalk will have the highest nitrates compared to the middle or the top third. Leaves have less nitrate, very often very little, and the grain generally has none. So here's a little ditty on plant nitrate metabolism. So nitrate uptake, though, is normal in a plant, and when we have normal conditions, nitrate is converted to nitrite, which is then converted to ammonia, which is used in protein synthesis for the plant to grow. However, drought conditions favor nitrate accumulation such that we might have an overaccumulation. The conversion to ammonia occurs in the leaves, so if the leaves are negatively impacted by drought, then nitrate will accumulate in the stem, as we have discussed. So in the ruminant, that nitrate conversion pathway is exactly the same in the rumen as it is in plants. So say a cow consumes forage with high nitrate concentration, that conversion pathway from nitrate to ammonia is then overwhelmed, and so nitrite begins to accumulate. So we can get the first step in the process, but not the second step. The problem with nitrite is that that ion competes with oxygen for red blood cells. And nitrite, when it comes in contact with those red blood cells, converts hemoglobin to methemoglobin. And unfortunately, methemoglobin is then incapable of oxygen transport. So from a chronic standpoint, if animals are exposed to a moderate level of nitrate over a period of time, some symptoms that they might exhibit include reduced appetite, reduced milk production, rough hair or unthrifty appearance, weight loss or no weight gain, and abortion. Certainly a big concern for pregnant cows in a lot of this country with these kinds of forages. From an acute standpoint, a really hot sample, animal will have an accelerated pulse rate, labored breathing, muscle tremors, staggering gait with weakness, cyanosis where their mouth tissues will turn blue due to the lack of oxygen because nitrite has converted hemoglobin to methemoglobin, and eventual death. So we'll talk a little bit here about small grains and sorghum sedan, and then we'll talk about corn stalks. My recommendation is always to test suspect forages. In Montana, we have a nitrate quick test that the county agents have in their offices for testing forages. It's a colorimetric test, then follow that up with a lab analysis for an actual amount if you find that sample to be hot. If the concentrations are high, you have several options depending on how high they are. You can dilute that with other low nitrate forages. You can avoid feeding to more susceptible animals. So in other words, pregnant animals are going to be the ones we're going to try to avoid feeding this high nitrate feed to. So other animals might be more appropriate. And you know, if it's really hot and you can find a feedlot nearby who might have some steers they could feed it to, in a small quantity, that would be a good thing. However, in the worst case scenario, that hay is probably going to need to be destroyed, and so you can have a really big marshmallow roast in that case. In thinking about corn and stalks and silage, the highest nitrate accumulation for corn and probably other plants as well occurs during heavy uptake. So if drought occurs during heavy nitrate uptake, then we're going to have a problem. So if drought happens during or immediately after pollination, then we have potential high nitrate. If drought occurs before pollination, we're probably more likely to be okay. A lot of folks maybe ensiled their drought-stressed corn this year. I know I've heard a lot of folks knew that their grain corn wasn't going to make, so a lot of people ensiled it. Nitrate actually dissipates during the fermentation of silage. And so with that in mind, producers should wait at least 3 weeks for fermentation to progress before they feed that high nitrate silage. Moisture is, of course, a concern, and a concern in drought, too, with how much moisture is in the corn. If recommendations suggest that if the corn is ensiled at less than 55% moisture, there will be less fermentation and then less nitrate breakdown. So that might need to consider testing that nitrate in the silage after you have it in the pit. As far as how the feeding value of that drought stress silage might be impacted, certainly we know that drought results in either no or only partial filling of the ear. So depending on the damage, generally drought stress silage is anywhere from 90 to 100% of the feeding value of normal silage. However, with this lack of fill of the ear, there's going to be a higher cob to grain ratio, which will indicate increased fiber and decreased energy. How about the shelled corn then? Well, generally drought stress shelled corn has anywhere from 92 to 100% of normal feeding value. We'll have a lower test weight. Depending on the market that you're in, market discounts for the low test weight may be greater than the decrease in feed value, which would be a bonus for someone feeding corn. In reference to corn stalks, cattle prefer grazing the leaves and husks, which are lower in nitrate, so that's a good thing. Drought-stressed stalks, though, might be stunted, and so then because of that, cattle will tend to eat lower on the stalk than they normally would because the nitrate will be higher. Drought-stressed corn stalks are also a concern in regard to the corners and edges of maybe some corn under a pivot. So producers also might leave cattle on stalks longer due to the feed shortage that we're experiencing, which forces the consumption farther down in the stalk where the nitrates are high. Some general suggestions for grazing drought-stressed corn stalks would be to not turn the cattle in hungry. If you're concerned about pivot corners and edges where the plants might be more severely stressed, you might want to fence those out. Really pay attention to how the cattle are consuming the stalks and pull them as soon as they've eaten most of the leaves and husks. And there is a product on the market that contain nitrate-utilizing bacteria, a bolus, and you can help the rumen adapt to those higher nitrates. Now, certainly this isn't going to cure nitrate toxicity, but is something that you can help the rumen adapt. So in regard to weeds, nitrate peaks at the pre-bud to the bud stages of the weed, and nitrate concentration decreases as weeds mature. So certainly I know that I did a quick little survey of our county agents and had some information in regard to how many samples they tested with their quick test. It ranges anywhere from 10 or 12 samples a year up to more than 200 samples a year. A lot of those are going to be small grain forages in our part of the world, so forage barley and forage wheat. All right, switching gears then to prussic acid poisoning. So we're going to talk about the sorghum and sedan families of forage more now. The way this one works is that drought-stressed plants in these forage families produce cyanogenic compounds. And once those compounds reach the rumen, they're converted to cyanide. So it's a cyanide poisoning. You might have read in the news, there was some cattle in Texas who succumbed to prussic acid poisoning earlier in the year, caused quite a bit of a ruckus. Concentrations greater than 0.1% of the dry plant tissue are considered highly dangerous. So even a very small amount is going to be very worrisome. The symptoms can show within 5 minutes of consumption, and death can occur within 15. So symptoms we might see would be salivation, labored breathing, muscle tremors, incoordination, bloat and convulsions, and in this case the death is also from respiratory failure. Prussic acid poisoning might be associated with periods of rapid growth, maybe after rain or after irrigation on previously drought-stressed plants. I'm not sure that was really an issue, because once we hit drought, we were in drought, but certainly something to consider. So in order to prevent prussic acid poisoning, you really wouldn't want to graze those drought-stressed sorghums unless they're tested for hydrocyanic acid. You'd want to graze the second growth sorghum with caution if the conditions are poor, and probably want to wait a couple of weeks after drought-ending moisture to graze. One thing about prussic acid poisoning in the sorghum sedan thing that's different than nitrate is when forages are harvested for hay, in the curing process, the prussic acid poisoning risk decreases because the cyanic acid decreases as the hay cures. However, there is no change in the amount of nitrate in a forage as it's cured for hay. So I really encourage those nitrate tests in those poor conditions to be done ahead of time, before cutting. Then at times you can wait and hope that conditions will improve. So real quick here, we've discussed a little bit about overall forage quality, nitrate toxicity, and prussic acid poisoning. So probably the main feeding risks from my perspective for livestock, beef cattle in particular. So I would be happy to take questions if we have any.
Okay, thanks a lot, Rachel. We have a few questions for you. First one, when looking at hay, are there any visual clues that the hay will have high nitrates and needs to be tested?
No, there aren't any visual clues that the hay will have high nitrate. So in those drought conditions, certainly getting it tested is necessary. You can have some lovely looking, say, forage barley, that's just hotter than a pistol, so certainly not a visual cue, something that you need to have analyzed.
Okay, one from our audience, how much does the nitrate utilizing bacteria bolus cost?
You know, I am not sure about that. I would have to check. I haven't priced those, so I don't know that information.
Okay.
Bova Pro is the name of the one that I'm familiar with.
Okay. Thirdly, are there any feed additives that can be added to the ration to offset high nitrates?
So feed additives generally, other than the bolus that I described, probably not. So that nitrate's going to be converted to nitrite in the rumen. So knowing ahead of time and being sure to dilute that with other feeds is pretty critical.
Okay. Have you heard of any concentrated areas where high nitrates or prussic acid poisoning is at a really very high risk?
Okay. Areas I've seen and heard of high nitrate throughout the state of Montana this year. I'm less familiar with nitrate risks in other places. I do know that my colleagues at other universities, University of Nebraska, have been putting out quite a bit of information regarding the nitrate risk in grazing corn stalks. So I think that certainly throughout any of these drought-impacted areas, I think it's certainly something to take a look at.
Okay, a couple of other questions that came in from our audience here. Is a prussic acid concentration related to frost?
I believe it can be. After frost, I think you have to wait a little bit to graze it, but you might, after a hard frost, be in better shape. But I'd be wanting to ask somebody in your area if you have forages with that risk.
Okay, and another question from our audience. For when cutting a grain hay, is there a time of day that can lessen the risk of nitrates?
Okay, sure. Nitrates tend to accumulate overnight in a plant because the leaves aren't photosynthesizing in the dark. And so throughout the day, so you can have a decrease in nitrate from morning to afternoon in grain hay. However, if it's a hot sample, often you won't be able to continue to, the drop in nitrate won't be adequate to take you out of the unsafe range over a day. So you might have to wait several days if you test it and it's hot, but certainly nitrate will decrease a certain amount from morning to afternoon.
Okay. Another question from our audience. How long will a bolus last in the rumen?
Well, they're slow release, so I think part of what the bolus does also is it provides those nitrate utilizing bacteria, and so if the cattle are grazing the high nitrate forage, then that provides for those bacteria a way to continue to reproduce. So you should be in pretty good shape if you. Have them exposed to the nitrate forage. If you were to take them off and put them back on, you would probably need to rebolus. But it, as long as you have an environment that's good for those bacteria to produce, you should be in fairly good shape.
Okay, and then one last question here that has to do with pasture, but what concerns are there when cattle are turned out on a very drought-impacted pasture following little moisture, and then when the grass begins to grow?
Okay, well, certainly if we get some moisture and we go into, in Montana anyway, we go into spring and we get some spring moisture, grass tetany is a concern. If we have those cloudy days, that's going to be some calcium-magnesium imbalance as the plants are rapidly growing. So we might see more risk of that if we do get that moisture, especially on those pastures that might have been taken off pretty short. Often we can dilute the grass tetany risk as well with old dry forage that wouldn't have that issue. So we might want to keep an eye out for that. So a preventative method for that would be to feed high magnesium mineral going into that grass tetany risk time of year.
Okay, Rachel, thanks a lot. It's always good to have an animal production person on with these agricultural economists. So thank you very much for your presentation.
You bet.